Welcome to Fear the Boot. My name is Dan.
This is Mary.
This is Doug.
And this is Wayne.
Okay, that's a much better recording because I had the setup turned on this time. For those of you that don't podcast or do anything similar, you know, like both of you, since apparently not everybody has a podcast, just an FYI that if you're getting into this, you have to turn on the devices before them to record. So, that aside, I decided to rename this. We're not the Iron GMs. We're not doing Iron GMing because that's been kind of played out. And also, iron is not the strongest metal. We are tungsten GMs. So I've started titling the episodes WGM because W is the periodic symbol for tungsten.
Wolfram, right?
I don't actually know.
I believe it is. I think Wolfram is where that W comes from.
Yeah, I will openly admit my ignorance. I know like lead is plumbonium. Mm-hmm. I don't know what it is for tungsten. All right, so the one for today, and this, I was inspired for this one by watching a trailer for the upcoming Ghostbusters movie, or the one that just came out, and we're not going to spoil it because I couldn't if I wanted to, as I'm seeing it tomorrow, so I haven't even seen it, but that inspired me for today's ingredient for the Tungsten GMs, which is the dead are consuming the living. All right, that's today's ingredient. The dead are consuming the living. What does that mean to you? Let's roll for initiative and see who goes first. I got a 5.
Go ahead, Wayne.
I got a 15.
17.
12.
Okay, so it's Doug, Wayne, Mary, me. All right, Doug, go for it. The dead are consuming the living. What's the game?
So the world's population got too big, and the god of death decided that he needed to fix that. So he brought the dead back to life to consume the living. And when the living are consumed by the dead, or the undead, or whatever, they don't exist. Or if they do exist, they're just little chunks. They can't move, you know, and stuff, and eventually they decompose. And
so it's about ecological balance.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah.
So it's just too damn many of us, and death got tired of sitting in traffic.
Yeah.
Or, you know, medieval traffic, whatever. When did you picture this game taking place? Past, present, future?
I was thinking the bubonic plague era.
Okay.
So the Middle Ages.
Okay.
Where you have a lot more dead people than living people?
Yes. Yeah. So it was, okay, it was about population control and resource use.
Yeah. I think that's about it for me.
So it's like Greenpeace, except with a mass extinction.
Right.
I like it. All right. So second up was Wayne?
Yep. So I've thought about the prompt. I don't want to go with something I would normally go with, like zombies. Mm-hmm. Zombies seem an easy one. Vampires seem an easy one.
Yep.
I like the idea of spirits that are feeding off of emotional energy. That,
ooh, okay,
instead of just being a fighting the ghost or fighting, you know, the bad guy, what your party has to do in the course of this game, it could be a region they're in, it could be the whole world, whatever. The dead in this area are feeding off of people's emotions. If that emotion is negative, then they are turning toxic themselves.
It's like the plot in Ghostbusters too.
Very much so. That idea of the more anger, the more that's what's feeding them. So to be able to deal with the situation first, you've got to get everyone to stop fighting because things are getting too bad, too powerful, and the dead spirits they're more than you can take on because they're being fed by anger. You start feeding them some hope, some happiness, then they weaken, and then you can fight them and deal with the situation.
Wayne, did you ever play the video game We Happy Few?
I've heard of it, but no.
I think it is a wildly, if not criminally, underrated dystopian game. And I understand why, because apparently when it released, it had a lot of incomplete content and a lot of bugs. By the time that I got around to playing it, they had fixed all or at least most of that. And so I had a really enjoyable time playing it. I love the game. But I wonder if part of your world would be the requirement that because the undead are reacting to negative emotions, that there's a societally mandated thing to keep people happy, that you must stay in a good mood. It's like every day you have to take your joy, except in our setting that might be an edible. And you have to do something to keep yourself in a good mood, because if you're down, you're depressed, you're mad at your boss, you're mad at your spouse, you're whatever it is, you're mad at traffic because Doug's God of Death has not cleaned that up yet, then that's just making the undead powerful and monstrous. And so you get this dystopian story where the world's in a horrible state, but you have to stay happy anyway, because if you don't, you make it worse.
See, I like that idea, but I think it would go in a different direction.
Like, don't ever send back your stuff at Applebee's because it's undercooked.
No, I think it would go in a different direction of mandated medication to keep everyone zombified.
The equilibrium kind of effect.
So yes. No emotion.
No emotion. And
so instead of joy or weed, we're going for like Seroquel.
Yeah.
Because then there's nothing for them to feed nothing on, good or bad. Nothing for them to feed
on. Yeah, I like that idea of that's how people are dealing with it. And that's not fixing the problem.
But it's keeping it manageable.
It's keeping it manageable, but it's not fixing it.
Yeah, the bean counters say that eventually the trend line will get to where we can kill them.
Yeah, 2 weeks. It'll only take 2 weeks. But I like that. The party needs to come up with ways to get past even the medication that people are taking to bring happiness, because that weakens them. And then they can deal with it.
There was another game. I'm going way back here. I think it was called Bureaucracy. It was a text-based adventure game from like the 80s. And the setup of it was you just had to get through a day and accomplish some relatively menial tasks. I think the later Postal series drew some inspiration from this. And all you had to do was not have a heart attack from high blood pressure. And everything in the world was just constantly needling at you. Like, if you went to your answering machine, there was a message you had to get off of it. But before that were like a bunch of sales calls and then one from your ex-wife and all this stuff that's like ticking your blood pressure upward. And so you had to figure out how to get through the day just smiling and moving forward, because if you experience the world as it really was, or your life as it really was, then you would die. Except in this case, you wouldn't just die. It's not just about you. You're actually sealing the fate of humanity as a whole.
Yeah.
And so there's now a pressure from other people to say, it's not just your problem if you're angry. We have to deal with you.
Yep. And I like the idea of dealing with it is muting everything.
This would be a whole lot fewer commercials on the radio. All right.
I got a question for you, Wayne. What would happen if someone forgot their medication?
Well, I think the medication probably is in the system for a little bit.
Okay.
But if they forget their medication, then they start to have, more emotions.
Okay. And then, so I guess that strengthens them.
Yeah, it's a government mandated medication to keep you mellow. Keep you, tone. Basically, we're giving everyone Ritalin that doesn't need Ritalin.
I'm trying to picture some of just the day-to-day things like that. And that's why Bureaucracy came to mind. Of like, you have to go to a doctor's appointment or a funeral or something that is obviously very upsetting, but you cannot feel those emotions. It almost seems like there'd be a second campaign after this of the aftermath of everyone suddenly feeling again and having to deal with all the things they did not deal with. Because if I call my boss, be like, work pisses me off, so I'm not coming in today. And the boss be like, I think that's a great idea. That's probably best for everyone. Yeah. Do I still have a job after this apocalypse has been fixed?
Yeah, and I definitely think the party needs to come from outside. That they're not medicated.
Yeah.
Or be the subversive element who is specifically
choosing not to take their medication.
Yeah, okay. So you're like coming back from the International Space Station or something and have never been part of this. All right, Mary, what you got for us?
Okay. Well, so my default is necromancy whenever we talk about dead things. So we're that's where we started here. And I think that this is a world where magical power is everywhere. Like, almost everybody has a little bit of it because it's something that's carried through bloodlines. It's a genetic thing, or, you know, but carried through bloodlines. Yes. So what has happened is that but necromancy is one of those things that is antithetical to life. So it hasn't really been an issue to now because you can't transmit. You can't basically breed more necromancers if death is the power, you can't get it from creating new life. So you haven't had an issue before, but something changes. Something either wakes up or gets unleashed, and now you have a necromancer or a small cabal of them in the world, and they've decided that the solution is if the dead consume the living, then they are literally draining the magic out of the world because they can kill it and subsume it. And therefore we are no longer they're no longer under threat from every other type of magic that exists.
So is there a balance that there needs to be maintained to keep the magic, or you following me?
I mean, maybe it's a case of a world like yours where they've just been the life, or all the other magics have been unchecked for so long that something has now woken up to bring balance back to the world, but it's seen as a threat by everybody who is alive.
Yeah, or maybe in this case, necromancers were wiped out years ago, and there is one coming back, but that's something that the other magics have always been against because you said it's the opposite, essentially.
Yeah.
It seems like a lot of people would have real interest in that, too. Because if there is a magic of life, then people that are getting healed, people that are being sustained by that, whatever, now have a very vested interest in this not occurring. Because if this starts to screw the equilibrium, then, or at least I guess it's really not in equilibrium.
Right.
But a desired imbalance, if that starts to move back towards equilibrium. It's one of the things that I liked about the plot of Final Fantasy XIV. And I guess, mild spoilers if you're about two expansions back on that game. But the dangers they have in that of, what if the world is too good? Mm-hmm. That what happens if light totally overcomes darkness? And that creates a sort of dystopia of its own. And I realize some of that's unique to their particular cultural and religious view of light versus darkness or good versus evil, which might be a little bit harder to chew in a Western mindset, I guess. But
at the same time, there's some truth to the you cannot see where, or light doesn't have definition without shadow.
Right. And in order to maintain that, you have to create a sort of autocracy that's very limiting. So what era have you pictured for this? Is this going to be urban fantasy, medieval?
And what is the party?
That's a good question. What's the party?
I guess this is sort of a, in my head, it's kind of maybe a Victorian sort of era where you have not steampunk, but you know, before a lot of modern technology, with a very hierarchical class setting.
Yeah,
where if you have more power, you have more power, and since it's transmitted through bloodlines, you can collect them or protect them based on breeding, and maybe your party are people who are somewhere in the middle. They don't have a whole lot of inherent magic, but they have enough to be threatened by, you know, the consuming darkness.
Do you ever play, and I realize I'm bouncing through a lot of video games here, moving a little closer toward the present day, do you ever play Arcanum?
I haven't, no. I've watched it being played a couple times, but I've never actually played it.
So Arcanum, it's a isometric game, very similar in terms of how you play it to like Fallout 1 and 2 or something like that, where you click on the map where you want your person to walk and you have an inventory and all this. But it's similar to that, and it's about sort of the mashup of steampunk or clockwork punk with magic in it, set against the backdrop of a very regimented, very proper Victorian society, with people who are on the outside living in these slums and sewers. And
you know, there are so many punks now, and I'm left wondering what is even punk. Because, like, I've run across in the last 2 weeks solar punk and hope punk.
I saw that. Dude, I think I may have seen the same meme you did, because I saw solar punk and I'm like, what the hell does that even mean? There was another one I saw called Ray Punk. R-A-Y.
Right, yeah.
What the hell does that even mean?
I said, and hope punk was the other one that I...
Hope punk?
Yep. Basically a... hopeful futures.
Yeah.
But what makes any of this punk?
I mean, to be fair, how do you define punk anymore? Like, even in a musical sense or in a...
I mean, cyberpunk made a certain amount of sense because of the fact that the punk wasn't the cyber.
Right.
It was a punk anarchist sort of storytelling where you have this overbearing, highly corporatized society, and you're part of the resistance, you're part of a countercultural punk movement, and there is cybernetics.
Right.
The cybernetic did not make it punk. It was punk, and we're adding cybernetics. But when we talk about like diesel punk, steampunk, all this other stuff, that's not what they're doing. That's not the story they're usually telling.
Right. We're changing the aesthetic, but losing the inherent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which just basically means society is overrun with one particular type of technology. Everything relies on the mono technology, and therefore it's now punk.
And we've been able to, we've created all the technology that currently exists, except it has gears or it has ray guns or it is made out of whatever it specifically
is. Or runs off of Kentucky Fried Chicken, and now we have chicken punk.
Because when I would think punk, I would think fighting against the norm.
Right.
Yeah.
But when you see things like steampunk, solar punk, hope punk, it's not fighting against that, especially hope punk. Hope punk is all about hope.
Yeah, that seems very antithetical.
There's no punk to it.
Yeah.
So, all right, mine is very modern day. And I would actually run it as a Ghostbusters game. This is a plot that for years I wanted to run in a Ghostbusters game, but I have never found a system that I felt did a good job of showing Ghostbusters the way that I would like to see it portrayed. And since I don't own the rights to this, I'm not even going to waste my time attempting to create this game. But the plot that I had in mind is that there is some kind of spirit or dark god sort of thing that's coming back, and it wants to bring its own people back with it. So, like, imagine, let's say, for example, this was like an ancient Egyptian, I don't know, demon or some kind of one-off spirit or whatever, but it's something kind of out of time and place. And it wants to take the world back to where it was and bring back its followers, but it does not have the ability to create life. And so in a sort of zero-sum game, it has to play with the life that already exists. And so all of a sudden, there's an outbreak of what appears to be a disease, where people are like, their flesh is rotting, they're growing weaker, they're becoming more disease-ridden, they're starting to fall apart. And the players, who are a Ghostbusters franchise, somehow comes across the right artifacts, the right occult document or whatever, to find out that what's going on is that while the living are falling apart in all of these different tombs and cemeteries and whatever, for the people this spirit wants to bring back, their bones are reforming. Flesh is regrowing over them. They are coming back to life because life is a zero-sum element. And so they're just moving it from one set of people to another. And so you now have this quandary of, yeah, the living are dying, and that's a terrible, terrible thing. But at some point, you get some percentage of society that was on the front end of this that's maybe died, and other people are now alive again. And if you stop this process completely, you'll re-kill those people. And so it's like you kind of have to hammer that one out a bit. But I've always liked it because I felt it created a sense of slow creeping horror, because every day you're finding yourself a little weaker, a little bit more infirm. And people would be at different points in this. You know, there might be people who aren't touched at all until very late in the process. Well, there are some people who die almost immediately right up front. And so society is occurring at different stages of this process. And your job as the Ghostbusters is to bust this ghost and to stop this process to save the living in the world from their life being transferred off to people who belong in the grave.
And they need to have an NPC they love that is one of these people that's come back.
Oh, yeah, that would be awesome.
Yeah.
They don't know that that's what they are at first, but they an NPC that they absolutely love, you reveal, is
one of those people. Yeah, like maybe one of the first people back is actually someone who knew this would happen and thousands of years ago put themselves on the front end of this. And that's actually who comes to you with the job. And you don't realize that they were not born anywhere within the past century, that this person is an ancient, ancient individual who has been dead for thousands of years, but they come to you with the truth. And yeah, you could add in other NPCs that are beloved or something like that.
Well, and you get into moral quandaries where it's like, where especially if the people who are being raised essentially from the dead did not have a choice in it. Like they didn't ask to come back. They didn't choose to siphon off life energy to kill anybody else, but now they are alive.
Yeah. They were potentially in an afterlife.
Yeah.
Yeah. I had not even contemplated just being in some kind of Sheol or underworld sort of thing where they're like in a torpor. You know, because obviously this assumes that there is something that survives death in order to work. Otherwise, you don't have ghosts and spirits. But I had not thought about what if these people were not just in some kind of dark, cold soul sleep, but were actually in what may have been either a very positive or very negative afterlife.
Yeah.
And they're begging not to be sent back or upset that they've been brought from a perfect afterlife into kind of a crappy world.
And then you have the question about whether the people who are dying now are just being swapped out in these afterlives that maybe they don't believe in anymore, but were real for the people of this culture that existed thousands of years ago. But because the soul is basically being siphoned out, modern souls are ending up in these afterlives that they don't have any knowledge of, but could be paradisical, or
then all of a sudden the Pope finds his heart being weighed by Anubis or whatever.
Yeah. Well, and what kind of twisted person is somebody who has been in a horrible place for millennia? What felt like an eternity?
Yeah.
Yeah, you get somebody who will do anything they can to stop you, including profound physical violence, because you just brought them back from hell. And if they don't get a chance to sort that out, then that's where they're going back to.
Yeah, I love that. I love the there's a lot of opportunity because they're coming back in a physical human form to actually have NPC conversations. Because there's not a lot of opportunity with ghosts to have some of that conversation. There are for some types of ghosts.
Right, but most of them are not manifesting in a way that is communicative.
Yeah, and that's the idea, is that you are dealing with something that is supernatural, but is also very human. And very humanized, that you are dealing with regular people who have just simply been put through an extraordinary event. But this would be sort of like, I guess, if the Thanos snap, turns half the population to ash, but in the process brings back an equal number of dead people.
Mm-hmm.
Which is obviously not how that plot goes. But,
not at all, but it's...
No. Might be a what if episode or something.
Yeah, there you go. So I realize we're doing things backwards here a little bit, but just in case you've not caught it, the Fear the Con Kickstarter is live. That's once again a wing night on Thursday, June 20th, with the con itself on June 21st and 22nd. As of this recording, I think we're at about 60% funded.
Yes.
So, and that's only within less than a week. So we're doing quite well. Very pleased with that. Huge thank you and a whole lot of gratitude to the people that are supporting this. We're really looking forward to this convention. So please do get out there, check out the Kickstarter if you're at all in a position in life where you can do that.
If not, just show up in June.
Yeah, if not, just show up in June and hang with us, throw some dice, have some fun, just be part of it all. It's
and at very least, share the Kickstarter with your friends.
Yep. And as with past years, this will be an unticketed event, so it's free to everyone. We just need the money to put it on, and then from there, everything else is just show up, and all you got to do is participate. So check the show notes for a link to that. And other than that, have a great week in great games, and we will catch you next time.